Hello and welcome to Runway Girl Network in Conversation, a deep dive into aviation and the passenger experience. I'm RGN Deputy Editor John Walton, and today I'm in conversation with Berdís Nordal, a photographer and industry observer based near Reykjavik. Berdís, welcome to In Conversation. I'm excited to talk about Iceland today.
Yeah, hello.
Before we get started, thanks to our sponsor Bolteron, a Simona company, purveyor of high-performance thermoplastics for tomorrow's aircraft interiors. Next time you settle into your seat on an airplane and pull the window shade closed, consider the colour, thinness and opacity of that material, designed precisely to keep the sunlight out so you can rest. That's Bolteron. Learn more at boltaron.com. Let's jump right in. Last time I was in Reykjavik, someone from Iceland Air joked that Keflavik Airport, their home base, is something like the largest aircraft carrier in the North Atlantic. So how has aviation developed in Iceland? Since the days of Loftleiðir, the airline flying old Canadair, what was it, CL-44s, across the Atlantic with 189 seats on them way back in the day.
Yeah, it's mostly good, but also bad.
Obviously, we have Iceland Air now, and WOW Air developing. Where do they each respectively sit in terms of their strengths, particularly in the perception of the local market?
Well, Iceland Air is a full service, mostly carrier, so they are highly regarded. Also, they have a bigger fleet, so they can respond to any failures and such much better.
Currently, you see the Iceland Air is really a Boeing operation and WOW Air is Airbus. Tell me a little bit more about that. What can Iceland Air respond to that WOW Air can't?
Mostly by having extra planes, especially in winter, available right away. But it's harder in summer always. But winter is like they have a few spare planes, essentially.
Mm-hmm. So the peak season for the market is the summertime, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
And what roughly is the split between Iceland market, both inbound and outbound, and connecting market, obviously over Keflavik?
WOW Air was talking about 50-50.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And is that mostly people coming into Iceland for tourism and business, or is it mostly Icelandic people travelling?
Both. Icelanders have been traveling much more recently than after the depression, so after the market crash. So the market is improving. It's almost 2007 again.
Mm-hmm. So where does the Icelandic market want to travel? Is it to Europe? Is it to the States? Is it both?
Mostly both. Europe is very popular. America is very popular also.
I mean, and is it sun, sea, and sand destinations, or is it city culture, or what's the current trend?
I think the Mediterranean summer holidays are always popular.
Mm-hmm.
Also, city travels is up, more culture and such. Like you have the culture in Iceland is expanding with the improved living standards, and so it goes with that travel to cultural cities is also up.
Interesting. I mean, to what extent did that sort of 2007 crash affect the Icelandic travel market?
Well, it basically disappeared, mostly. Icelanders stopped flying abroad, and Icelanders had to refinance themselves. I think they were close to going under. They had to take a few years in actually rebuilding. Then you have the 2010 and 2011 eruptions. Especially 2010, that paralyzed part of Europe and got Iceland famous. Then the market started to explode.
I was looking at the Iceland Air fleet the other day, and the number of sources they have for their Boeing 757s is really impressive. Tell me a little bit more about the role of that aircraft and the passenger experience on board in sort of developing really modern Icelandic aviation, right?
Well, the 757 is, I can say, the perfect aircraft for Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
You have the range for most of America and almost all of Europe. You have the perfect number of seats for Iceland. It's not perfect anymore, but it was perfect at the time. based on the number of passengers and all that. And also, they can be bought very cheap. There are like piles of them in the desert in America, just ex-American and all those that are like just parked waiting for Icelanders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, though, of course, they've taken 767s in recent years as part of the capacity growth that they're seeing.
Yeah.
Tell me more about that decision. Where did that come from?
It's easy when you think about the some places in Europe have like two planes wing to wing every day. So yeah, after they did the 787 orders, the 767 was like the right aircraft time. And the CEO of Icelanders said in an interview a few years ago that they had stopped the one plane fits all and started right sizing.
That makes some sense. And obviously we're seeing some renewed interest in the 767 from passenger carriers. The scuttlebutt in Seattle at the moment, of course, is that they're looking to reopen that line for passenger use. I mean, they've maintained it for military and freighters, of course, with the suggestion that United is going to launch a particularly large order. In that case, do you think Icelandair would also be interested in some late model 767s?
I think so, especially if the 787 continues to be expensive on the market. And like, I think the 767 is always going to be cheaper than the 787, so the numbers will be much more favorable for the 76.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess looking at the Icelandair market, the 787 can feel a little bit like, and this is something of a cliche, but I think it's probably true, too much airplane. Right. I mean, what's your thinking on that?
It can exist for like Asia and bigger places in Europe and America, but as a one plane fits all, no way.
Mm-hmm.
Like they are taking the 737 MAX, both the 8 and the 9.
Mm-hmm.
So they are stop using just the 757.
Yeah.
Because they're getting older and not big enough and all that. Mm-hmm. But sometimes the 757 is too big, especially on smaller markets, like, what I say, Halifax and Birmingham, Billund, Philadelphia, and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've noticed that Icelandair has recently been starting some new Bombardier Dash 8 operations, right, to closer-in destinations. Tell me more about that. Who's flying on those routes? Is it a corporate route? Is it leisure destinations?
I think it's mostly leisure.
Mm-hmm.
But Greenland is expanding also.
Mm-hmm.
You have Air Greenland flying both Dash 8 and Dash 7s to Greenland, to especially Nuuk and other places in Greenland from Keflavik. And yeah, they're flying Aberdeen and other places for Icelandair.
Mm-hmm.
So,
now, I guess my question is, on board, how consistent can they make the passenger experience between, I guess, you know, you jump on a 767 and at JFK and you transit to a Dash 8, compared with what Icelandair has previously offered, where, you know, you're changing planes, but you get a 75 all the way, right? How are they working that?
I think the Dash 8 is a much more newer plane than the Fokker 50s
mm-hmm.
they had before, but I think I haven't flown them actually. But I think the product is very like not that different from the 75s. It's like the seats are all modern and slimline,
mm-hmm.
and so you, of course, the aircraft is smaller and you have the propellers and all that. But I think it's not like you're jumping on a, let's say, Hercules or something.
No, absolutely. But one of the things I've always found interesting about Icelandair is its real dedication to segmenting what's actually quite a small market in terms of passenger experience diversity. I mean, up front, they've still got those, what is it? It's an Avio Interiors Andromeda seat in Saga class, which is the business class. And that's really just it's a recliner. It's quite a nice recliner and a comfortable one, but it is just a recliner. And then they have the economy comfort, which is what I flew when I last flew Iceland Air. And I find that a really interesting proposition, because essentially in Saga class, you get the full business class experience, right? A separate full business class meal and so on. But in economy comfort, you get your choice of the of anything you want off the apart from the champagne, that is, anything you want off the menu, and I find that a really compelling proposition, because actually, you know, my last flight was a day flight from London to Washington DC, so it's a day flight both ways, quite a quick flight, and actually I didn't really need a big quote unquote a big meal. So I found that really, really interesting as a proposition. What's the perception among Icelandic travellers about that? Do people appreciate the inclusivity, or are they just looking for the space? What's the selling point for economy comfort on the domestic market?
I don't think the economy comfort and business class is marketed that heavily locally. It's more like they are running ad campaigns recently about with the slogan "Your home in the sky," where they show like families in their homes, but you see the airplane window outside. So it's like obvious references to the lack of luxury in Wow's low cost model versus their like free baggage and Wi-Fi and all that, better seats.
Okay. Interesting. Do you think that's because they, you know, obviously WOW doesn't offer a premium product, but do you think that's because they now have to compete in that market, so that's why they're advertising?
Yeah. You can see it like WOW is adding like twice as many destinations as Icelander.
Obviously, what I find fascinating about the market is the growth of WOW. And not just because they're flying to my new home airport, which means that that'll make it a really interesting transatlantic offer. But they've been able to go so cheap that people are really starting to take notice. I mean, you know, less than $100 transatlantic. Do you think that's sustainable, or are they going to keep doing that sort of lead-in pricing?
I think they will continue that model for a while. They have big capital and big money, like channels, so they can sustain it for at least a few years, at least.
Yeah, where's their money coming from? Do they have sort of deep-pocketed investors behind them, or is it what they're... Yeah, they do. Okay, interesting. Who is that?
CEO is, well, mostly the CEO, who's an entrepreneur and was in the telephone business and IT business before. So he has some pockets and also has big access to good loans and money channels.
I see. Interesting. Now, obviously, one of the key things that people are looking at when they travel is in-flight connectivity, which Icelandair has been offering over its Global Eagle KU-band system, but WOW Air still doesn't offer. Is that... I mean, obviously, that's a big thing for the international connecting market. Is it a notable part of the decision process for Icelandic travellers in that case?
Not close to me. It's mostly price and like routing and such. But actually, WOW has said like they won't add any in-flight entertainment and Wi-Fi, at least when they said that a few years ago. Due to weight and cost, which fits their low cost model.
Yeah, I mean, and I mostly buy that. Except that, you know, I guess we keep going to these trade shows for the passenger experience industry, and we keep seeing these vendors who say, yes, we can put this very low weight box in your overhead bin. So very minimal intrusion into the aircraft, very minimal installation time, very minimal cost. Is WOW taking a leaf out of the Ryanair playbook here and being purposefully and publicly even more low cost than they need to be in order to persuade people that they have cheap fares?
Yeah, but also they do have cheap fares. Like, I made a comparison recently that, like, New York and other places. It was like half price for, yeah, I was looking at Florida also.
Mm-hmm.
It was like half price. You can get a A330 to Miami for half the price of a 757 to Tampa, for example.
Hmm. Yeah.
And also same with New York, but you do end up in Newark.
That's yeah.
Your only problem.
Well, you know, some people like that.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when my parents live north of New York City, they always prefer to get to Newark yeah. rather than have to drive to JFK. Yep. You know, I guess it's the same with a lot of the WOW destinations, right? Their choice to go to BWI, yep. for example, in Baltimore, yep. Washington. But half the fare, that's really interesting. I guess people can entertain themselves for yep. that length of time. I mean, what do Icelanders prioritize at that point? Do they go for the ultra cheapest WOW fare and try and stuff whatever they can in their cabin bags, or do they say, look, I got a cheap fare and I'm happy to spend a little bit more on some ancillary options?
I think it's a bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
At least, or more the second option, because oftentimes, even if you add the bag fees, it's still cheaper than Icelandair.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I know that Cynthia Drescher, one of my RGN colleagues, she flew WOW, and her takeaway was really, look, you definitely need to know what you're getting into. But from a sort of slightly premium economy point of view, and that's lowercase premium economy, not premium economy, but from a sort of slightly better than very back of the bus option, because they sell the extra legroom seats and few people want to buy them, you actually have a really spacious experience up there, which I find really interesting in terms of their product.
Yeah.
Now, I keep hearing that WOW may or may not decide to put some, you know, actual premium seating in their A330s. What's your take on whether that's likely to happen?
Well, it's possible. They have the big seat option.
Mm-hmm.
That is the Zodiac 5810,
mm-hmm.
if I remember correctly. That it's at 37 inches mm-hmm. of pitch.
Yeah.
But it's like, that is, you won't, it's hard for you to get uncomfortable in that.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit less than Icelandair offers with their with their Andromedas, but I guess also it's only available on the A330s and not the A320.
Yeah.
Whereas Icelandair will offer you, unless you're flying on the Q400s, they'll offer you a proper business class seat for the whole trip, which I think that's an interesting and useful differentiator there.
Yeah, but you do get better pitch at the front of the A320s.
Yeah, I guess. That's certainly true.
But also, last year I travelled on the WOW A321s to London.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sat way in the back. So, like, the space wasn't my biggest issue. My biggest issue was the seats. The old seats from the older A321s were a bit cramped, but the seats were fine. On the newer A321s, with the new slimline seats, the space was good when you have the pocket above, not at your feet. But the seat was really hard. Cushion was very thin. Seat cushion. I had that problem on Lufthansa also. So I don't really like the slimline seats, personally.
So it's those same Recaro seats that Lufthansa introduced as NEK, isn't it? It's interesting. They seem to be a kind of a love hate seat. You know, I certainly prefer them flying around Europe on Lufthansa and on the Lufthansa Group airlines that have them. But that's just, you know, maximum a 2 hour flight, potentially connecting to another 2 hour flight. But once you get over that,
but on the Lufthansa flight, I had much better pick versus Huawei.
Yeah,
so it was more comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel as you could reasonably expect from a full service airline versus an ultra LCC. It's fascinating to me how how the decision to prefer a slimline seat, both from an airline and a passenger point of view, happens.
Another point was, like, I also flew Austrian on the Embraer 195s. That was surprisingly comfortable. was like surprisingly roomy with the same similar slimline seats. Shorter trip, but still, I didn't feel the harshness of the seats in that flight.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Those Embraers can be exceedingly comfortable. I flew one from Geneva to Helsinki with Finnair recently. And I just kept thinking, you know, actually this is one of those economy experiences that I'm going to continue to try and seek out, just because it is that much more spacious and comfortable, and there's just something about that is a premium experience, even though, you know, even if you're only paying for economy. Now, I guess what isn't a premium experience these days is transiting through Keflavik, right? It is a very crowded airport at the moment.
Yeah.
And I hear a lot of people saying, you know, look, especially at peak time, that's a big problem, right? Because both Icelandair and WOW have these various waves of flights going in and departing very quickly. What's the overcrowding situation like at the moment?
It can be a mess in the summer, especially in the summer. At the peak times, it's like, but I personally, my travel this summer was outside of peak travel and was like fine, mostly empty and just fine.
Yeah. So you traveled outside peak hours on purpose, did you?
No, just for the Lufthansa flight.
Ah, I see. Right. So taking yourself out of the transatlantic connection window, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What's the airport working on in terms of improving that experience? Are they expanding terminal capacity? Are they adding more gates? What's going on there?
They have been adding more terminal capacity. They even built a set building next door to move the bags system and all that, probably to free up space in the terminal, and also warehousing and all that.
Right.
Also, they have been expanding, Iceland had built a new lounge this summer that is on the third floor instead of the basement, and much bigger than before.
Yeah. Yeah, I visited that basement lounge and it was nice, but it was also a basement. So, yeah, it looks good. What's been the response from travellers on that one?
I think it's been good. The little I've heard, it's been good.
Now, of course, it would be wrong to talk about Iceland only in the context of Icelandic carriers. We've already mentioned Lufthansa. Yeah. And the US airlines are also trying to break into the market, correct, with the recent tourism boom. What's going on there? Do people want to fly them? Is it practicable?
Yeah.
I know you had some issues paying for tickets, of all things.
Yeah. That was United.
And what was the problem?
To start with the Icelandic angle first, the Delta has been flying to Keflavik for a few years with the 757s, and I think they have been doing good. But also those prices are a bit high for the Icelandic market, but that's another problem. Also, but now we have United coming next summer, with the 757, which just to show that the 757 is the perfect aircraft for Iceland. But about the United issue, both this spring and this fall, I was booking a flight for a family member, but you can't choose Iceland when you're putting in your credit card number. Iceland doesn't exist.
That seems like something of an omission for United.
Yeah.
Was it a mistake, or did they specifically, is it some sort of anti-fraud situation that they don't want to take Icelandic credit cards?
To be honest, I don't know.
Yeah.
But also, I had just after United didn't work this fall, I tried American, also for a domestic US flight. You could choose Iceland, but you were redirected back to home point.
Huh.
Yeah. So it didn't work properly. And also, that family member talked to American. They basically said, not a problem.
That certainly seems like something they might want to look into. That's an odd situation for airlines to be in. And look, I mean, it may seem like a silly or weird thing, but actually not being able to purchase those tickets is going to be a big problem. You know, there are frequent flyers who are Iceland based. I was talking to Lufthansa and they said that it's actually one of their stronger non-German markets, simply because people value the connectivity from Reykjavik into secondary European cities where Icelandair doesn't fly. So it does strike me as strange that that's not something that works easily and simply. But you know, it's one of those tricks of the e-commerce. I mean, it's no longer a revolution, is it? It's the status quo within aviation, right?
But also, after that failed, I went to easier solution, Southwest.
Yeah,
that worked totally fine.
Yeah. Why would that? Why would the airline that you know has only just started flying internationally out of the US? Why would that one be easier than the others? It is weird, isn't it? But I guess so. Looking to the future, what's next for Icelandair and for WOW? Is it expansion? Is it consolidation? Is it something else?
Mostly expansion.
Mm-hmm.
This year has been, let me say, crazy for new routes versus the few years previous. You have like Icelandair at in Berlin, but that was in response to Air Berlin going under.
Mm-hmm.
They were also adding Dublin, but also the surprise Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's their logic on that route? I mean, I'm sure there are a bunch of people in Cleveland who want to travel, but is it still part of this, you know, ability to add secondary cities with a connection over Keflavik?
Yeah, I think so. And especially with the new Maxis, so they can fly to secondary cities and still make good numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, that is something of a testament to the economics of the 737 MAX, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously that's been one of the things that Icelandair has been looking for is this replacement aircraft. Now, obviously it can't serve all of the markets that the 757 does. But I guess, you know, look, if you're especially looking at the larger aircraft, the MAX 9 and the relatively new MAX 10. That's certainly something that starts being persuasive, I think, for an airline like Icelandair that is looking to replace, in some cases, upgauge and then expand at a lower capacity.
But there is one key difference from the 737 MAX and the 757. That is cargo space.
Yeah.
Cargo volume. I remember when the Icelandic Search and Rescue team went to Haiti after the earthquake there. The Icelanders flew them to Haiti on a 757. But then they were picked up with a, what was it? Air Iceland. No, Iceland Express 737. I was told they had to leave a few cases behind of equipment.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things that I'm always struck by is every so often I see an Icelandair cargo 757 going past.
Yeah.
And so that's obviously a very big part of that market that they're hoping to reach. And you know, you can get those ULD containers in a 757, but not in a 73. So what do you think is Icelandair's strategy there? Will they fly some of the 757 cargo aircraft? Will they convert some of the older 757s to cargo?
I'm not sure if many planes will go to cargo, but maybe one or two at most.
Yeah.
But the cargo market tanked following the 2007 recession.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually got rid of the third freighter they had.
Yeah.
They were now down to two freighters. The cargo market has been growing again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, I mean that's certainly handy. You know, the ability to get from a secondary city to a secondary city with a single stop and fast cargo. Is obviously a big part of the world economy on the transatlantic side of the world anyway. But let's turn our attention to WOW. What does their future look like? Is it adding more 330s and 320 families?
I think so. They have orders for three
830neos. Mm-hmm.
So, and they have said they are looking at Asia.
Yeah, which has been really a market.
Yeah, that has been a market that has been almost completely forgotten from Iceland. But you have Japanese and other Asian countries that are interested, other tourists from Asia that are interested in flying to Iceland.
Mm.
But Iceland does not have a travel agreement, air carriage agreement with Japan.
Yeah, I mean, I know that the I know that JAL offers a number of charter flights, but that's not the same as scheduled flight agreements, is it?
No, the JAL can't sell those tickets in Iceland, only in Japan.
Yeah,
but the Icelandic government, few of the government, have been pushing Japan in making an agreement, but Japan is dragging their feet in making an agreement.
Hmm, interesting.
So JAL has to fly the planes empty back home.
Yeah, yeah. It is fascinating, isn't it? The way that the political barriers to aviation are still there in some ways.
Yeah.
That is obviously one of those markets, you know, both the Japanese market and the Chinese market, which is continuing to grow. I mean, even though Japan is seeing a declining population for demographic reasons, you know, Japanese people still love to travel internationally, and particularly to Europe. I mean, it's one of the continually strong markets in a number of European countries. And of course, the appetite of China's growing middle classes for travel is going to be, you know, the story of the next 50 years. So if WOW can do that, does that automatically mean that the Chinese carriers will be able to, you know, let's say WOW manages to open up China routes, the Chinese carriers will be allowed entry into the Iceland market. What do Icelanders do currently? Do they transit via Europe or the States to Asia?
Yeah, mostly Europe. I think Helsinki and Amsterdam and other big hubs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Helsinki is a big transit hub for Asia.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked, I think it was our last episode, to Olli Vainio in Helsinki. Well, he was in Oulu at the time. But about the Helsinki hub's role in serving those European markets to Asian markets. It's an interesting point to remember that Iceland is indeed one of those secondary markets as far as Finnair is concerned.
No, well, as Finnair did start Keflavik this summer,
mm-hmm.
Icelander has had two flights a day to Helsinki.
Yeah,
and Finnair had one, and I noticed the prices on Icelander dropped when Finnair started.
Yeah, yeah. What were travellers doing? Were Icelandair and Finnair co-chair partners before? Was that how that worked?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Co-chair.
Now, if Finnair can do it themselves, I guess that makes that makes some sense for them. It really does remind me how interlinked all of the various aspects of aviation are around Europe, and particularly around Northern Europe.
Yeah.
That's it for today's conversation. We certainly hope you enjoyed it, and we're always keen to find out what listeners think. Please feel free to email me at john@runwaygirlnetwork.com with your suggestions. And thank you also to our guest, Bergdís Nordal. Bergdís, where can our listeners find you?
I'm mostly on Twitter.
And what's your Twitter username?
It's Beggi_North.
So it's Beggi_North. And a hearty follow recommendation from me. Bergdís has a lot of really interesting information on the Icelandic market, often translated from Icelandic, so which is not a language that I speak. So I do recommend that listeners follow her for information on this very interesting and currently very hot travel market. Well, hot in the proverbial terms, though I suspect as we move towards November, it's no longer quite as toasty as it can be in the summertime. As ever, you can find me on Twitter at ThatsJohn and everything from RGN on Twitter at RunwayGirl and at RunwayGirlNetwork.com. Thanks for listening.